A couple weeks back on the show, we looked at a new fusion technology breakthrough using lasers to start a fusion reaction to create energy. It's still a long road to usable fusion energy in our daily lives, but that same kind of laser technology is already useful for astronomers. Our next guest is using the same kind of high-energy laser technology to study the stars and distant planets from inside his own lab. Adam Frank is the Helen F. and Fred H. Gowan Professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Rochester. His latest book is Light of the Stars, Alien Worlds and the Fate of the Earth. Adam, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, we had this apparent big breakthrough in fusion. Why are you, as an astronomer, excited about that?
Well, I'm excited about that development as a citizen of the Earth, because it's been a long, long time that we have dreamed of being able to use the same mechanisms that the sun uses to generate energy here on Earth. I mean, literally from the 1950s, people started thinking about it. And there was this joke that fusion was always 20 years away, but that breakthrough was the first time it was done in a lab. It showed that it was possible. And so there's still a long route to building a reactor that you could power a city with, but just showing that it was possible in a lab was a milestone we had to cross.
But then it turns out, if we're trying to get the same energy source as happens in the middle of a sun, that might let people like you study what happens in the middle of the sun. How can you put that into action for your research?
Yeah, so the amazing thing is that these, in order to make fusion work in a lab, you have to, or at least one way of doing it, is by using these huge, factory-sized lasers to squeeze a target down to conditions, temperatures and densities that you get in astronomical environments. And so even on the long road towards the milestone that we reached this year, 20 years ago, we started using these lasers, these giant machines to get to do experiments where we brought targets up to astrophysical conditions to study things like what happens when a star forms, or what happens when two giant clouds of interstellar gas slam into each other. So it turns out that these, since you're already trying to get astrophysical conditions in the lab to make power, you can just make those astrophysical conditions and study them as a way of for the first time actually having direct contact with the stuff in astronomy, as opposed to just looking through a telescope.
Yeah, you wrote a piece in The Atlantic, Adam, and I got the gist that you and fellow astronomers are a little jealous. Chemists can fiddle around with test tubes, and physicists and geologists have their things, and then you mostly only get to look at things from very far away. How exciting is it for you to be able to do some of this stuff in a lab here on Earth?
Yeah, well, so the really interesting thing about astronomy is it's an observational science. So you never get to tweak anything. You just basically, look through the telescope, you capture a few photons, beat them to death so that they give up their secrets. But you never have a chance to say, well, what would happen if that star was a little bit bigger? Or what happens if that gas cloud was a little bit more dense? So being able to actually do experiments where you run the experiment, look at the data, and then go back and change conditions, that was just not in the cards for astronomers. And remember that astronomy is a very old science, right? It goes back, thousands of years. So this is the first time in the entire history of the field that we're able to create kind of macroscopic conditions, enough of the stuff that we can really poke around in it and begin to see sort of how this stuff would behave under different kinds of conditions and answer new questions.
So what are some of the biggest questions? You hinted at a couple of them there that you're hoping we can use this same technology we use for fusion here, again, to gain that understanding. Let's stay with stars for the moment.
Well, okay, so with stars, when stars form, you get a giant gas cloud that collapses on itself. And what's really amazing is you get this material falling down onto the protostar, but you also get these jets, you get these supersonic beams of gas, of plasma, streaming out at 500 kilometers a second. And they're very mysterious objects. Why do they form? What happens when they form? And you can actually create little versions of these, that are like a centimeter across inside the lab, but they're moving at the right speeds and they have the kinds of physics involved that you actually see in the one that's a light year across. So we can actually keep running these experiments in the lab to understand the physics of these hypersonic magnetized plasma beams.
We're talking to Adam Frank, professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Rochester, looking at the same technology you may have seen headlines about with fusion energy. It's letting us, well, astronomers anyway, do experiments here on Earth to understand what happens in the middle of stars. And Adam, in that piece in The Atlantic, you wrote, there are some planets, these really big, super Earth-type planets that we keep spotting elsewhere. We can use some of the same technology to know what's going on inside of them.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the stuff that really gets me excited right now. So, you know, we, throughout all of human history, we had no idea whether there were any planets out there other than the eight orbiting the star. It could have been that planets were incredibly rare. Turns out they're dime a dozen. There are planets, every star in the sky has planets orbiting it, which means those are places where you might get life, right? So we're really interested in the conditions in some of these planets that we found. And it turns out the most common kind of planet in the universe is one we don't have in our solar system. It's called a super Earth, and it's a planet that's maybe two or three times the mass of Earth. And that's big enough that we don't really know what the conditions inside a planet like that are. Will they produce plate tectonics? Will they produce magnetic fields? All these things that actually have turned out to be very important for evolution on Earth. So what we can do with these in the laboratory is we can take stuff that we know will be inside a super Earth and squeeze it down to the conditions that are deep, deep, deep in one of these planets and see things like, well, does it flow? You know, is that material going to flow, you know, distort? So that would be the kind of thing that would tell us, oh yeah, maybe you'll get plate tectonics in that kind of system. Or does it conduct electricity, which will help us tell us, do these super Earths have magnetic fields, which are very important for protecting life? Yeah, so these new experiments we're doing are taking us, they're kind of a new kind of telescope to see inside this entirely new class of planet that we've discovered in the universe.
That one key ingredient inside planets, I think you mentioned this in that piece, is iron. So like, can you literally say, let's take a chunk of iron and expose it to the kind of temperatures and pressures that we wouldn't have on Earth, but we might have inside this super Earth, and then see what happens?
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. We take a little sample of iron and blast it with these, you know, 60 laser beams or 192 laser beams and squeeze it to the point where we can see whether or not it will stay liquid. Like, when does it melt? Because that's what's really important on the inside of, like, inside the Earth, there's a liquid iron core that rotates. It swirls around as the Earth rotates. And that's what creates the Earth's magnetic field. And it's the Earth it's that field that protects the Earth from the harmful radiation from the sun. So does the same thing happen in a super Earth? And recently, some of my colleagues did an experiment where they blasted that iron, and they saw, like, oh, now we can tell how big a super Earth could be before it loses the magnetic field.
Now, I've talked to people who, you know, with the Webb telescope, the astronomers around the world are like lining up to get some time on that. Do you have something similar to that? I know at University of Rochester, that's a big fusion laser research place. Is this a thing where you've got astronomers saying, hey, I've got this project I want to check out. Can you give me some time to blast these lasers?
Yeah, well, so the laser at the University of Rochester, which is called the Omega Laser System at the Laboratory for Laser Energetics, it's actually a kind of public telescope. Like, other scientists can apply, say, hey, I've got this great idea, I want to use it. You know, can I get some shots on it? Because each shot, every time you turn on that laser, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the price is, but it's pretty expensive to do one shot of that laser. So, you know, the government has provided funds for that. And so we have a continual stream of people coming through, both astronomers and laser physicists, because they have to work together. The astronomers don't know how to use the giant laser, working together, you know, proposing projects to study everything from the inside of planets to, as I've said, you know, looking at how radiation flows through the outer layers of a star. So now it's becoming quite a popular way of asking astronomical questions.
And briefly, I assume there's a lot of computer modeling going on of the things we're talking about inside suns and stars. Are these observations, when we do these blasts, going to make those computer representations better?
Yes, that's exactly one of the things you do with this. So, you know, in astronomy, we've gotten quite used to use, that's actually the kind of work I do. I'm a computational astrophysicist. And so to look at something like a cloud collapsing under its own weight, a giant interstellar cloud to form a star, what we do is we run these incredibly complicated numerical simulations that sort of animate the process and let us see what happens. But of course, we haven't had any, you know, we can't test them other than, you know, the what we see in a telescope. And so using these experiments, we can actually refine our simulations and make sure the physics is working correctly. So then when we go apply them to something like a giant interstellar cloud, we have much more confidence that the computer is doing the right thing.
Adam, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Oh, it was a real pleasure. Thank you.
That's Adam Frank from the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Rochester. He joined us to talk about how fusion technology is helping us test distant stars and planets in labs here on Earth.